my Bobolas. I'm back. It's been a minute. I've been writing a lot more, and I haven't really recorded podcasts. I actually have a couple episodes I recorded that are sort of like in a back catalog, some interviews that I need to edit and publish, but I have not done that yet. Just been writing a lot more. And also, like, I went to Israel for a couple weeks, had a great trip, but I didn't bring the mic with me. So was tricky to record anything. So for those of you who prefer the podcasts, sorry, I hope you don't mind. Sorry, I've been absent. You know, you can always go back and listen to the old episodes, I guess. Lots to talk about Israel, about learnings from Israel and interesting observations there. Had a great trip. I wrote a good amount about it as I was going, but you know, I think it'd be helpful to sort of summarize that into one piece. The last time I was in Israel before this trip was 27 years ago. It was 1996. I was there for my own bar mitzvah trip, and a lot has changed since then. I was there for 2 weeks, and there was some stuff I loved, some stuff I didn't love. Have, you know, lots of tips for those who are planning their own trip to Israel. You know, we started in Jerusalem, and the first thing in Jerusalem, we landed, and there's this tradition in Israel that the first time you arrive, you're supposed to kiss the ground as soon as you get off the plane. Thankfully, our flight, instead of having a jet bridge, it was just stairs, so we could literally walk down and kiss the ground, and that's a very meaningful thing. Landed in Jerusalem after some, you know, mayhem with the flights and almost not making it, but made it on time, which was great because then was able to go straight to the Marathon Expo and pick up my bib number to run the Jerusalem Half Marathon. And, you know, I'm really glad I was able to do that. You know, slept for like 3 hours, got up totally cracked out at like 3 a.m. So that's like, I guess, what, 9 p.m. New York time. Went right to the starting line, ran the half marathon. I had forgotten, or maybe had never even realized, that Jerusalem is at altitude and it's on a hill. It's very steep. So it's a tough place to run a half marathon. It's a very tough place to run a race. Beautiful, incredible. Like, you know, to run through the old city and all these historic sites, and we'll talk more about those later, that's very special, and it was an incredible experience. But it's a very tough course. I finished in 1 hour 50 minutes. That is quite a ways from my PR, which is around 1 hour and 40 minutes. But you know, running at altitude on hills with a few hours of sleep, I thought that was a pretty good outcome. And it was one of the highlights of the trip. It was very cool to do that race. What else did I love in Jerusalem? The old city. So Jerusalem, the sort of core of Jerusalem, there's like this touristic core in the middle of it. And the center of that is the old city, which is literally what it sounds like. It's where like Jerusalem was 2000 plus years ago. And it is divided into four quarters. There is the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, and the Armenian quarter. And it's a very contentious place. The, you know, quick history lesson, this is the site where 2,500 years ago, more than 2,500 years ago, was the site of the first, where the Jews built the first temple. And that was destroyed, I think, in 586 BC. And then they built the second temple. And then that one was destroyed. And the only remaining part of the second temple is what is now called the Western Wall. And for a long time, there was only a small portion of the Western Wall that was exposed. And people would go, it was considered the holiest site in Judaism. And people would go there and they would write down on a note all of their prayers and wishes and put that note in the wall. And over the past few decades, there's been a lot more exploration, and now more of the wall is exposed, which is very interesting. A lot of that part that's now been excavated is underground, and so there are this elaborate network of tunnels that have been built so that you can see these other parts of the wall. And that was super cool to visit. I'd never seen that before. I didn't know it existed before. It was also interesting, while exploring all this stuff underground, and we had a great guide, there are signs everywhere that's like, you know, this exploration was generously funded by so-and-so, or the digging here was funded by this person. And almost all of it came from rich Jews from New York. All names that I know. Many of the people happen to be senior partners at Apollo Global, the private equity firm. That's kind of interesting. I mean, even my own synagogue, much of the fundraising in the past decade came from Apollo people, especially Leon Black, the former CEO and the founder of Apollo, who I guess you maybe say now disgraced founder because of his possible engagement with Jeffrey Epstein. But yeah, a lot of these Apollo guys funded this exploration and would highly recommend seeing this this stuff. And another thing that's kind of interesting to me that I learned recently, I learned it sort of before the trip and then confirmed it while I was there, is, you know, we've talked on this show about people who explore looking for dinosaurs and how that seems like a very weird thing, right? These paleontologists digging for dinosaurs. Let's talk about archaeologists for a second, because that's also a weird one. And something that I learned recently, which was sort of like an aha moment for me, right? Like when I heard this, I went, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. Most archaeologists, like let's call it 99.9% of them, are Christian religious nuts who, going back the last 100 to 150 years, because that's really when the profession became a thing, it is Christian religious folks who are hoping to find proof that will support the story of Jesus and the story in the Bible. And so that's what archaeologists are really trying to do. They're trying to find some way to authenticate that. Like, if I just dig hard enough, maybe I'll find the proof that I need for the story. So all of this digging it's mostly like, I guess, priests who had, you know, some sort of a vaguely scientific calling and then thought, like, I can just dig. But they're not going into this as pure scientists, right? They're not going in like, hey, maybe I can be proved wrong. There's like a point of view, and then they're just looking for any evidence that will support that point of view. But it's not like they're going to go, oh, I didn't find it. I guess the story of Jesus is not correct, right? You're not going in with like a pure hypothesis that can be tested or disproved. But that's what archaeologists are. But so these archaeologists have been digging and digging to try to uncover more of the Western Wall. It's called the Kotel in Israel. And there's a lot that's been excavated. It's incredible to visit. So that's in the middle of the Old City. But then, of course, right next to that is the Dome of the Rock. And that's where, I guess that's, there's like a mosque in the middle of it, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that's where the Muhammad in the 600s ascended to heaven, maybe. But then also very close by is a church that I was able to visit. And the church is where it's on the site of where Jesus was crucified and then also was found and ascended to heaven. So you've got like the holiest sites of three of the major world religions, and they're all within a few 100 feet of each other. So you can understand there's a little tension here. There's a little bit of everybody wants a piece of this. But it's also, it's a major tourist site. And it's interesting to see it from that perspective. Like, you just have these old alleyways that look like Indiana Jones could have been exploring, and there's, you know, lots of merchants selling trinkets and overpriced bottled water and stuff like that, because it's a moneymaker. And then, you know, it's fun to explore. There's a lot of cool stuff to see there in the center of Jerusalem, in the Old City. One of my favorite experiences of the entire trip was going to the Western Wall, going to the Kotel for Shabbat on a Friday evening. And it's sex segregated. So I was there with my son, and we went up to the wall and we said the Shechechianu. That's the prayer that Jews say for the first time that they do something. We said the Shema. We joined a Shabbat service. Now, there's like 200 different Shabbat services going on simultaneously at the wall. It's open to anyone. And so you just have all these different services. You have some people praying by themselves. You have some people having these very jubilant services and singing and dancing. And you can just sort of wander from one to the next and join all of these Shabbat services. It was a spectacular experience. It was a beautiful night. Really, really cool to do that. You know, the rest of Jerusalem was, you know, it was like kind of nothing. There's not a lot else to do in the town. We had 9 days there, which is way too much time in Jerusalem. You need like 3 action-packed days and you could see everything. There's just not that much other stuff to do in Jerusalem. You know, it's kind of gross otherwise. Like, it feels interesting and historical. The food was horrible everywhere, though. It's just kind of gross. And then, of course, the highlight of Jerusalem, besides the Western Wall, besides the marathon, was my daughter's bat mitzvah celebration. And that was incredible. We did it at the Kotel. There's, you know, a few sections of the Kotel. There's the men's section, the women's section, and then there's something called the Masorti section, where families are allowed to be together. And so we had a celebration there. There was a guy with a shofar and a guy with a drum who like played us in. That was very cool and exciting. And then my daughter read Torah. She was actually, they had a Torah there that had been donated by our synagogue in New York 5 years ago on to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel. And she was able to read from that Torah. She did a great job. I was kvelling. I mean, how special is that to have a bat mitzvah service right in the shadow of the Western Wall in Jerusalem? But really, other than that, like, Jerusalem is kind of a dump and you don't need a ton of time there. So, you know, a few days and that's plenty. After that, we went to a place called Mitzpeh Ramon in the south. That's like the Grand Canyon of Israel. There's like a huge crater there. I went for a cool hike in the crater. That was fun. What else? Went to Ben-Gurion University, which is one of the biggest universities in Israel. And that was nice to see. My grandfather had been a major supporter of the university. So it was very cool to see like his legacy and the work that he had done there and what he had created there. So that was very special to see. What else? Then we went to Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv could not be more different from Jerusalem. It is like extremely secular. It's like being in Miami. All the girls are in crop tops. You're right on the beach. There's skyscrapers everywhere. I feel like we only had a few days there. I feel like I explored like 5% of Tel Aviv and I could easily go back, but it felt really modern. You know, people imagine Israel like everyone is super religious, and Jerusalem is like that, but not Tel Aviv at all. I mean, could not be more Western and beachy and modern and totally different vibe. We did a few mitzvah projects while we were there. You know, small charity projects. We were there for my daughter's bat mitzvah. And as I've said before, and we'll talk more about this later, I feel very strongly that a bat mitzvah is not about just the celebration. It's about giving back to your community and taking stock of your life at this point in your life and feeling grateful, hopefully. And so we did these mitzvah projects. One of them was packing bags of food for Ethiopian Jews. Another one was harvesting kohlrabi from a farm for families that have food insecurity. We planted trees there. You know, I felt very strongly that this was an important part of the trip, and it was something that I cared a lot about doing. So, you know, those were some of the highlights of Israel. The current state of affairs in Israel, I've had a few people who asked me about this and what it was like being there. You know, if you read the newspaper, you would think that everything in Israel is protesters and suicide bombers, and that they're like going crazy there. It's the same way if you read only the New York Post, you would think that New York City was like a hellscape and The Walking Dead. Neither of those things is accurate. Like, it was just lovely being there. I know that there were these massive protests. We did not encounter them at all. We saw in one place, we saw like 20 protesters standing on the side of a highway. But like these 300,000 person protests, like, we didn't encounter them. It didn't interact with our trip. It was just, I mean, I know it exists. And by the way, I am in support of what the protesters are doing. So let's talk for a second about what they are protesting and what they care about. The basic premise is that Israel's Supreme Court has a huge amount of power, far more power than the Supreme Court of the United States, for example. Now, one of the reasons the Israeli Supreme Court has so much more power is that about 30 years ago, the Supreme Court granted themselves the right to overturn any law if they deemed it unreasonable. And this was meant to be a check, a balance against a religious party coming to power and passing a law that would infringe upon the rights of the individual and infringe upon the democratic nature of the country. And this is important because Israel does not have a constitution, right? Unlike the United States, Israel lacks a constitution. And so while the Supreme Court, I don't love the idea of a Supreme Court having so much power, I do like the idea that it creates a check and balance. And it has created an equilibrium that has allowed Israel to thrive. But right now, there is a coalition of right-wing parties that are in power. And they are mostly religious zealots. And they are trying to roll back the power of the Supreme Court. And there are huge protests, 200, 300,000 person protests against this. There are reservist soldiers in the military who are on strike and refusing to show up for work, essentially, because they are in protest of this. And, you know, arguably that weakens the country. And so as a result, the prime minister has put these reforms on hold. The protesters have gotten their way, and I am in support of that. I think it is the right move for this country. But if you read about Israel, you would think that everything is falling apart. It isn't. And just as I said, if you read about New York, you'd think there's, you know, crime on every corner, and there isn't, as we all know. If you read about Israel, you would think that, you know, there's Palestinian suicide bombers everywhere. And I'm sure there are attacks. We read about them in the paper. They happen occasionally. It's very sad. But it felt very safe being there. real, it felt extremely safe being there, and I was not worried for my safety for even a moment. It was great. There's something remarkable and moving and meaningful about visiting Israel. It's an incredible country. If you've never been, I highly recommend it. If you've been, go back. It's a very special place. I would like to go back. There's lots more of the country I would like to see. You know, I don't need to recreate the whole Jerusalem visit. Like, there's a lot more of the country. I want to go up north. I want to go to Haifa. I want to see more of it. I loved it, though. What a special, special place to go visit. So now I'm back in New York, and, you know, we're doing a traditional bat mitzvah celebration for my daughter here in New York. It's coming up in less than a month, and hers is the third one in her grade. She's doing it at age 12. Most of the kids are doing it at age 13. So she's on the younger end, but because she's doing it at 12, hers is on the early side. And I remember growing up and going to, I don't know, 25 or so of these bar and bat mitzvah parties every weekend for an entire school year. And that just, I mean, talk about diminishing marginal returns. I found myself so bored. You know, after you go to enough of these, it starts to feel like a burden, right? It's like, remember in your 20s when you're going to 10 or 12 weddings in a year and you're spending thousands of dollars on everyone else's wedding celebrations? That's kind of what it felt like. It was just all concentrated in one year, and it got boring. It got boring. It felt like a burden. And I hope that my daughter's doesn't feel like that for her friends. Maybe it will. I don't know. It's pretty early in the cycle, so hopefully it won't. You know, for my bar mitzvah, I've talked about this a little in the past. I hated all these, and I was the youngest in my grade. So mine was the very last one. And my mother knew I wasn't enjoying it. She decided to change the game. She, instead of one, you know, renting out a big event hall and throwing some mindless party that nobody cares about, we did something different. We rented a coach bus, and we brought my entire grade to Washington, D.C. for a long weekend. My sister was in college, and she got a bunch of her friends to come as chaperones. We rented you know, a bunch of rooms at like a Holiday Inn type of hotel and put four kids and a chaperone in each room. And, you know, if you ask anyone that I went to school with about any bar bat mitzvah, there's only one that they remember, and that was mine. And by the way, it cost about a quarter of what a traditional big party would cost. But now things have gotten even crazier. They've gotten crazier, and people are throwing parties that are $500,000 or $1 million. And I think it's gross. I think that the more they spend, it's usually the people for whom the Judaism and the spirituality and the religion and the values get lost in the shuffle. This is a major life cycle event. For my daughter, this is, now she is considered a Jewish adult. She's a woman, and she has worked incredibly hard to learn to read Torah and Haftorah. She's been studying hard and preparing, and our synagogue community will come together to celebrate that. And I'm happy to throw a party to celebrate that. Really, like, she's worked really hard. It's going to be like a big birthday party. But you can see, like, I've been to so many of these mitzvahs where the kids put minimal effort into preparing. They see it as a burden. They don't care about it. You know, there are certain blessings in Judaism. There are certain blessings where if you hear it a couple times, the tune gets lodged in your mind, right? It's like happy birthday. You can't sing happy birthday without the tune, because everybody knows it. And there are certain blessings that are the same way. And there are times when we're in synagogue, it happens a lot, and I see some kid who gets up to say the Kiddush, and you can tell that they've never heard it before, they've never practiced it, and that means that their family doesn't give a shit. It means their family doesn't have any Jewish observance in their home. And that's fine. I don't need to judge anyone else's religiosity, but it's just weird to spend $1 million on a party to celebrate something that you don't give a shit about and that you're not going to care about the next day. What's the fucking point? Just call it a birthday party. Say we're going to have a $1 million birthday party. I think it's a lot more meaningful to focus on the values and the community engagement part of it rather than these extravagant parties. And at these parties, you see, you know, these people hire dancers and DJs, and the dancers and the DJs, they give out little prizes to incentivize the kids to keep dancing. A $5 gift card to Starbucks or Chipotle or something. Sometimes they'll give out a basketball jersey, like a LeBron James jersey. A big trendy one now is to give out these giant oversized slippers that look like Air Jordans. They're called band slippers. And I've seen it over and over. What ends up happening is as you give this stuff out, the kids, it's not that it incentivizes them to dance. It turns into the Lord of the Flies, where they're all trying to elbow each other out of the way for a fucking LeBron James jersey or for a Chipotle gift card, as if their quick service restaurant needs are being unmet. You ever see like a scene in a movie where there's some town, all the villagers are starving, and then there's like an aid truck that comes with food, and then everybody storms the truck and ransacks it? That's what it's like at these bar mitzvahs. It is just gross. And I find it appalling. I don't want that. I've been to events, weddings or bar mitzvahs, where people get like a celebrity performer. And, you know, they get a musical guest. So, you know, Billy and Susie get married, and then they hire Dave Matthews Band or something to come play at their wedding. But you know what ends up happening? Nobody gives a shit about Billy and Susie getting married anymore. It just turns into a free concert. And so they're not really throwing a party for themselves. They're just throwing a party. And you lose sight of the meaning of the event. And it's the same with a bar mitzvah. If you hire these celebrity performers, it's not about the kid anymore. So I'm not here to criticize how people spend their money. I'm just saying that's not in my values. I care about marking this major Jewish life cycle event, and I don't think you need to hire Pink or Taylor Swift in order to do that. I think you can put some thought into it. Right? You don't need to just hand money off to a party planner and say, go do it, because you know what you end up with? You end up with something generic. It doesn't feel personal. It doesn't feel like it has anything to do with the kid or their family. They do things that don't make sense. I've been to bat mitzvahs. These are Jewish life cycle events. And I've been to them where you walk in and the first thing, there's a tray of pork dumplings and shrimp pad thai. Just put some thought into it. Because that's really dumb. So look, I'm really excited about my daughter's bat mitzvah. I hope she is too. I hope that the trip in Israel was as meaningful for her as I hoped it would be, as I think it was. And I hope it's fun for her and her friends, and that, you know, the thought that is going into it hopefully makes a difference. Hers is going to be one thing that's interesting about her party is that it's going to be mostly kids with some family members there. And that's a contrast. You know, I've been to bar and bat mitzvahs where you have 300 or 400 people and it is more adults because people invite the parents of all the kids in their child's class. I'm not doing that, both because it's exorbitant and it's not the vibe I'm going for. I think you run a lot of the parents get fucked up. And I don't think that sets a great example for the kids. When you have a bar or bat mitzvah and the parents come and they're all stoned and then they all drink. They don't all drink, actually. What ends up happening is the moms get high as hell. But they all think that they're sober because they're only smoking weed and not drinking. And then the dads get blindingly drunk. And I don't need it. I'm not interested in it. I don't know why these parents do that. I don't know. I mean, they set such a bad example for their kids, but I don't know why they do this. I don't know why they think that that seems like something that is, you know, useful or meaningful. And then, of course, they wonder, like, why is my kid getting stoned before school? Well, what do you think? What kind of example are you setting? It's the parents that are doing that the most, that are using substances the most. They're the ones whose kids come home from school and they stare at an iPad for 6 hours and their brain turns to liquid because they're getting underparented. I don't need that at my daughter's bat mitzvah. I'm just not interested in it. It's not in my values. Obviously, like, I'm sober. It's not in my values. I don't need that. And I don't need that example. So if other people want to do that, that's fine for them. But I'm not interested in hosting an event of that nature. So we'll be back with more soon. We can talk about things besides just bar and bat mitzvahs. Lots of interesting other topics to talk about, and we'll save that for the next episode. So thanks, everyone. Glad to be back with you all. Find me on social media, and we'll be back with more soon.